Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Hey, hail and hearty, good Monday morning to you. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of Arizona State Women's Basketball, and Brad is still under the weather, and we are hopeful to have him back very, very soon. Probably not going to be in tomorrow either, but that's okay. We'll just keep things moving along for him. I'd say middle of the week is probably when you'll see him again in this position. In the meantime, it's you and me today. And, well, not just you and me. I mean, we have Eric Sorensen, Jared's there. Everybody's here, right?
Jared Nielsen.
Yes.
I like how you said Jared.
I know,
and it's hard.
Here's
the thing. It's hard because
it's cold in here, which is why I'm wearing a jacket.
There are lots of Jareds, too, that run around this building.
You could swing a dead cat and hit 30 Jareds in this place.
And we love
all of them. I'm not interested in dead cats, either. Eric Sorensen is with us. Big day in sports. Even though it was kind of a quiet weekend in Arizona sports, which is what Sports360AZ.com, and we partner with AZ Central Sports. It's what we are primarily interested in. But obviously, we'll get to the things that you're accustomed to having taken care of on Monday, including news and notes with our friend Paula Bovin from AZ Central Sports. And we'll look at the news that was made over the weekend, both locally and a little bit pulling back to the bigger picture. But in spite of the fact that neither of the local big-time football teams were playing this weekend, still a lot to get to. Obviously, as we speak, press conference downtown at Chase Field to introduce Torrey Lovullo as the new manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, the announcement coming down midday on Friday. And they are introducing him to the media this morning. Lovullo, of course, was the bench coach for John Farrell in Boston with the Red Sox. Mike Hazen, of course, comes to the organization, to the D-backs, as their new general manager. And speculation was almost immediate that he would hire Lovullo to be his manager. Tied to that somewhat, the other gentleman who was considered to be the finalist for the job, Phil Nevin, apparently, according to reports, is going to be leaving the organization to join Bruce Bochy's coaching staff with the Giants. Now, I'm not sure. I don't remember reading that the Giants had an opening. I could be wrong about that. They might have changed hitting coaches. Either way, Nevin reportedly is heading to Bruce Bochy's staff in San Francisco, which, of course, will set off a chain reaction. A lot of people are speculating that Robbie Hammack, the former D-back catcher who managed this year at Mobile, will move up to Reno. Obviously, this will all sort itself out. The other issue, and I don't know if there'll be an answer to it today, although I'm certain that somebody in the media will ask Torrey Lovullo about this, is about his coaching staff. I'm a little surprised there was no mention of it in Nick Bacoro's story and Steve Gilbert's story. They alluded nothing to what speculation there is about the future of the Diamondbacks coaching staff. Names like Mark Grace, Matt Williams, Glenn Sherlock, Mike Butcher, Dave Magadan, among others. So we heard virtually Dave McKay. We heard virtually nothing, Eric. And I guess the major question that Torrey Lovullo and Mike Hazen will be asked today is, what's the deal on your coaches?
So you are far more in the know when it comes to baseball than I am. Is it common for staff to be carried over with new regimes, or is the new regime going to want new regime type guys?
It's a kind of
in
a
baseball.
Mix. It's kind of a mix. Let's use Chip Hale's hiring as an example. They retained Mike Harkey as pitching coach in 2015. Dave McKay, who's very closely aligned with Tony La Russa, stayed on through the transition. Glenn Sherlock has been on the coaching staff
forever,
since the inception of the franchise.
Yeah.
So you would hope, and Glenn's one of the really great guys in this game, and I hope that that he's still part of the coaching staff moving forward. Most of the other coaches that were in place in 2014, with the exception of Alan Trammell, who was Kirk Gibson's bench coach, stayed on through into the Chip Hale regime. You know how they do it in the NFL. When a head coach is let go, the entire staff in most cases is that's not quite the case in Major League Baseball. I'll give you another good example. Chris Bosio was the pitching coach for the Cubs under Dale Swaim, Rick Renteria, and Joe Maddon. So it's not a total house cleaning. I couldn't begin to guess or try to predict And I know a lot of people locally are going to be concerned about Matt Williams, Mark Grace. I really can't tell you. I have no way of knowing how they're going to approach that.
Yeah, I wonder if with Grace, just because he's been with an organization for so long, if that's more like a Bud Foster situation at Virginia Tech football. He's been the defensive coordinator forever.
Yeah.
And Beamer left, and now Justin Fuente is the head coach, and like Fuente is just like, yeah, he's going to be on staff. That goes without saying.
Yeah, I don't, and it makes it sound like Grace and Williams could stay just based on they've always been there. I still think, and I've contended for a long time, I know that Matt ran into a speed bump in Washington managing the Nationals. I think Matt would be really good if he's going to manage again, and I do think that A, he wants to manage, and B, I think he'll get a chance. I think he'd be terrific with a young team, a group of young players, you know, and I'm trying to think, is there a team like that in baseball now? I think he would be great moving into a situation like Atlanta, where they have a ton of young players and there are more on the way.
The Padres, maybe?
Padres. Andy Green is a great fit as a manager there, by the way. Gracie, I'm going to tell you a quick 30-second story about Mark Grace. When he was on television, he tried very hard, and he's a very humble guy, and I love Gracie to death. He's one of my favorite people, baseball or otherwise. He tried very hard to kind of come off like that he didn't know that much. Let me tell you something, friends. He knows, he's forgotten more baseball than most of us ever remember. Quick story, take 20 seconds. We used to do a winter tour. We go to places around the state. And one year I was on a tour with Gracie, Glenn Sherlock, a couple other people. And we were going up to the northeast corner of the state. Our first stop was Globe. The next stop was Sholo. Well, on that highway along the rim, you lose all cell service. So we were pretty much just kind of staring at each other. The photographer who was on the trip with us, as we get on the RV to go from Globe to Sholo, asked Gracie just a simple question. How often is a hitter looking for a fastball on the first pitch? Mark Grace took the entire 2 hours from Globe to Sholo to answer his question. It was like listening to a college lecture. I could have listened to that for 8 hours. And when I got out of that RV, I said, I don't ever want to hear anybody say, this guy is a goofball, this guy doesn't know anything. And I know he tried very hard to come off as kind of, you know, that he didn't know that much. Friends, Mark Grace knows a ton. And he's going to continue coaching, whether it's here or elsewhere. And he's one of the smartest baseball people I've ever encountered. Suns lost last night, lose at Staples Center, the Lakers 119-108. And I know losing to the Lakers these days is a little different situation than losing to the Lakers 5-6 years ago. Nick Young goes for a 22. Doesn't Nick Young have a nickname that I'm forgetting?
He does, but I'm not aware of it.
Okay. So we don't have to go there.
No.
Young with 22 points. The Suns were led by Devin Booker, who had 39 points, 10 of 10 at the free throw line. Now, he was 13-29 from the field.
This is a step back. It is.
Yeah.
You had that horrible opening game against the Kings, and then you play really well against some really good teams, and you think, okay, it's a Sunday night, they're in LA, the Lakers are not good, that's a game the Suns should win, and you're not going to say that very much this year.
But it's going to be like that this year. It's a very young team, so you're going to have a lot of ups and downs. They had that terrific game Friday night,
yep,
at New Orleans.
Yep.
Just a tremendous, dramatic basketball game. Same thing with Wednesday night against Portland. You're going to have nights where they're going to go out there and they're going to have inexplicable performances. I should point out, for the record, another strong night on the boards for Tyson Chandler, 12 rebounds. Alex Len came off the bench and in 18 minutes grabbed 11 boards, 9 of them on the defensive end. What else jumps out at you? Booker, in addition to the 39 points, had 7 assists. And I did not, I'm going to confess that I didn't see a lot of the game. When I look at a stat sheet and I see that a player has gone 13-29 from the field, even in the NBA, that's 29 field goal attempts is a little much. So, yeah, it's great that he scored 39 points. But I also look at, okay, well, he took 29 of the 91 shots, too. Are we concerned about that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, he made 13 of them, and he usually shoots for an even higher percentage than that.
And
he is the best offensive player the Suns have, one of.
And I always, and I have to remind myself, I do college, women's college basketball. If anybody on my team shoots 29 shots,
there you go.
The coach is not in a real good mood.
I can
because
imagine.
Because she interprets that as a lack of balance, and in the college game, she's absolutely right.
But I guess I just think mine with the Suns, it's when we all know the Suns aren't going to make the playoffs. That's pretty much, unless something miraculous happens in the West, the Suns are not going to make the playoffs again. And it's, I don't want to say okay, but it's almost accepted. But the Suns are going to have to win some games. I mean, the Suns can't start off 2-17 and be like, oh yeah, we're playing all these teams close. Eventually, you're going to have to win some of these games. And you look at the schedule, and it started off so difficult. And you have that Laker game circled as, okay, that's a game the Suns should win.
Yeah, even though it was in L.A., now they play tomorrow night at Portland. That will not be easy. What's the? Let me get the rest of their schedule. I think they're back home on Friday night or Saturday night. And I got to scroll down here real quick, and I don't want to take up too much time with it. But the Suns fall to 2-5. The rest of this week, they come home Wednesday night. They host Detroit. Then Saturday night, they have Brooklyn, and then they go Sunday night to Golden State. This schedule early on is like, You go to New Orleans, two nights later in L.A., but that's the NBA, and welcome to it. Paula Bovin will be here, news and notes today. We'll talk a lot about the hire. She's at the press conference for Tori Lavallo. We'll also talk about the one football team that did play this weekend, although judging from the way they played, and I did watch the game, you'd wonder if play is really the actual description. As Arizona lost at Washington State Saturday, 69-7. I have some thoughts from both sides on this. I'm starting to get a little annoyed by Mike Leach, but I'll explain that coming up after the break. And I wrote a column that will appear on the website later today. If you're a U of A football fan and you're calling for Rich Rodriguez's head, you are officially out to lunch. I'll explain next on the Brad Sesmatz Show. Sports360AZ.com, AZCentralSports.com. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatz on Monday. Brad's under the weather. We'll get him back on the active roster as soon as he's cleared to go, as they say in sports. I'm Jeff Munn, the radio voice of Arizona State women's basketball. Our season opens Friday, by the way. If I can get a shameless plug in, Devils will take on Illinois State Friday at 4 o'clock at Wells Fargo Arena. The men open their season with Portland State at 7. Then we do it again on Sunday, a little bit more of a gap. The women take on San Jose State at 2. And the men play at 7, and I don't remember who they're playing because I do the women's games, and I don't pay that much attention to the men's schedule. But we'll, you can go to the website and find out who they're playing Sunday night. But big weekend of basketball coming to Tempe. ASU football plays Thursday night against Utah. And on that subject, and I'm actually stealing from my own column. You may get to the end of this and decide, well, I don't need to read the column. He just went on and on about it. But I sat down on my computer yesterday and just wrote a few things based on some of the things I was seeing in social media about Rich Rodriguez. Now, Arizona, if you're not aware, went up to Pullman Saturday and got drilled, 69-7. Now, I get back to Washington State in a minute, but I'm going to talk first about Arizona. There is, and I know Brad wrote a column on this recently as well, there's a growing amount of people, although it's still a vocal minority, that are suggesting that they want Rich Rodriguez out of here. They're 2-7. They're hopelessly buried in the Pac-12 South. I got a chuckle. The writer for the Arizona Daily Star, bless his heart, I think his first name is Matt, and I don't really recognize the last name, said after the game on Saturday that Arizona is virtually eliminated from bowl consideration at 2-7. And I guess technically he's right because Nebraska at 5-7 got into a bowl game last year. Friends, they're not going to a bowl game, okay? Let's, kudos to the writer for keeping hope alive in Tucson, but for goodness sakes, what are we talking about here? They're not going to a bowl game. All right, but 69-7 has led some people to start screaming that it's time for a change. Friends, do we really need to get out a DVD player and review the last several coaching changes at the U of A? Let's go back to 2000. You let go of a good man and a good football coach in Dick Tomey. It was wrong then. It's still wrong now, what you did in 2000. He ran a clean program and won more than he lost. And down there for football, that's about the highest mark you can achieve with that program. And still, there were some knuckleheads in Tucson that thought they should be in the discussion for a national championship every year. Dick Tomey's got to go. They bring in John Makovic. Tremendous resume. Coached at Illinois. Coached at Texas. Took Illinois to a Rose Bowl. Coached in the NFL with the Chiefs. Was a playoff coach with the Chiefs in the NFL. Within 2 years, he had a player mutiny on his hands over what the players described as abusive behavior. He was let go midway through his third season. At the end of that season, the hottest assistant coach in college football and the hottest coaching candidate in America was Mike Stoops. Every Division I program that was looking for a head coach targeted Mike Stoops as their number one guy. He was the defensive coordinator for his brother at Oklahoma. Arizona got him. It set off a hysteria in Tucson that was Lute Olson-like, that they had got the hot candidate. It took Stoops a while to turn things around because he did inherit a mess. He had him in a bowl game within 5 years, three bowl games in a row, but his behavior on the sidelines grew to be more of a concern. In fact, he even lost a game for Arizona against New Mexico by drawing a 15-yard unsportsmanlike conduct penalty that helped New Mexico put together a game-winning touchdown drive. And a 1-5 start in 2011 led to his dismissal. Then you hit lightning in a bottle, or caught lightning in a bottle, I should say, by hiring Rich Rodriguez. He'd done TV in 2011 after being let go at Michigan, obviously very successful at his alma mater at West Virginia. Comes to Arizona with credentials that are very much like Makovic's, but without the abusive treatment of players. He does get a little more animated than I'm comfortable with on the sidelines. When they were in the Fiesta Bowl against Boise State, ESPN must have had a camera devoted specifically to Rich Rod, and every time a call went against Rich Rod, it was just like watching a burlesque show on the sidelines. But the fact remains, the guy is a terrific football coach. I know you're upset. I know 2-7 stinks. But friends, if you're a Wildcat fan, I would like to ask you the following question. Realistically, do you really believe that you can go out and get a better coach than Rich Rodriguez? I'm not going to wait for your answer. The answer is no. The answer is no. You can't do better than Rich Rodriguez. Why? Go look at your stadium. Go look at your facilities. Greg Byrne's done a tremendous job upgrading the facilities for Arizona football. But you still play in an antiquated stadium. There isn't enough money to build you a new one. They're doing everything they can to kind of freshen the place up. It's a basketball school. Nobody competes with Sean Miller. Nobody competed with Lute Olson. It's not a football school. You are never going to do better than Rich Rodriguez. You're not getting Urban Meyer. You're not getting Nick Saban. You're not getting Tom Herman. You're not getting Jimbo Fisher. You're not even getting Ed Orgeron, who, by the way, coached himself right out of getting the LSU job full-time with his 10-0 loss to Alabama Saturday night. And as far as Rich Rod having eyes looking elsewhere, LSU's not going to talk to him. Purdue is not going to talk to him. There will likely be an opening at Baylor. I don't see him at the front of the line, although he does run an offense very similar to what Art Briles ran at Baylor. Texas will have an opening. Come on. You really think Texas is going to talk to Rich Rodriguez? I know I'm talking out of both sides of my mouth when I say he's a really good coach, but the big schools won't talk to him. But I'm standing by what I said. This is also a guy that he gets it. He understands the community. I hate to bring this up, but you go look at the video of his reaction in the hours after Sack Hemela's death. It shook him greatly. Now, no coach is so cold-hearted that a tragedy like that wouldn't bother them, but it really shook Rich Rodriguez. He cares about his kids, cares about Tucson. His son's playing high school ball in Tucson, if I'm not mistaken.
He is, and he's committed to play for Rich Rod next year.
And so,
which may or may not, I mean, that may or may not play into it.
But the bottom line, I mean, honestly, if you're Greg Byrne, and you decide to give in to the vocal minority, who are you going to get in? Who are you getting? Who are you getting? You're not getting anybody better than Rich Rodriguez. Name him. You know, our phone lines are open. Name who'd be a guy who would be willing to come here.
And we've talked about this. I've talked about this with Brad quite a bit, Jeff.
Yeah.
It's the, yes, they're 2-7. Yes, last year wasn't a great year. But they were the Pac-12 North champions just two short years ago. And the last time that U of A was at the upper echelon of the Pac-10 or 12 was quite a few years prior to that.
Yeah.
So just relax.
Yeah.
They're on their ninth quarterback. They're on their 48th running back. Their lines have been hurt. They've played some tough teams. They haven't, of course, they haven't played well, but just give it time.
Yeah, and one other thing, and I'm going to move on to Washington State. You're not a football school. You're not a football school. You don't have the facilities to be a football school. You're good at football. You go to bowl games. He got you to the Fiesta Bowl, but you are not a football school. You're a basketball school. Remember Sean Miller, red and blue game? You know, we want to go to the Final Four. And you're not a football school. All right, a quick thought about Washington State. Mike Leach, who obviously has run into some trouble with people in this part of the world, I am not in the business anymore of getting excited about Mike Leach for this reason. Number one, he can say whatever he wants, but two of the last 3 years, his Cougar program is open with embarrassing losses. 2 years ago, they lost at home to Portland State. This year, they lost at home to Eastern Washington. So you know what? They're not a juggernaut, kids. I know they're 7-2. I know they're the biggest obstacle standing between Washington and the Pac-12 title game and a spot in the college football playoff. Because I think Washington will have more trouble with Washington State than they will with Colorado or USC or Utah, whoever comes out of the South. But Mike Leach, and I get it. Arizona was badly banged up. There, as Eric said, their depth chart is almost non-existent. Why is it that Mike Leach is rolling 69 up on Arizona? Is he trying to score points at the playoff committee? Are you nuts? He's 7-2 in the Pac-12. The only way he's going to the college football playoff is to buy a ticket. So why he's running up the score on Rich Rodriguez, and I get it. He runs an offense. Oh, well, they can't help but score points because they're throwing the ball, and that's all they do. Yeah, but they do have run plays in the playbook at Washington State, and he could have used a few more of them. And I'm just getting to the point where it's like, come on, seriously? I mean, what are you trying to prove to people? Yeah, I mean, they've been a great story. They're 6-0 in the Pac-12. The Apple Cup game Thanksgiving weekend is going to be flat-out must-see TV, and I know it's a Fox game. It's on the day after Thanksgiving at 1:30 in the afternoon here, and it will be the game of the year in the Pac-12, bar none. What a great day that day's going to be. You've got Washington State in the afternoon, and then ASU and the U of A that night. Seriously, Mike Leach, they're in Pullman, kids. They're not, I mean, I'm getting really worn out on Mike Leach complaining about people stealing signals and then running up scores when he's got no chance of going to a playoff. Paula Bovin was at the Tori Lavolo press conference, which may still be going, but we'll talk with her. News and notes on a Monday, as we always do. Coming up next on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. We'll be joined shortly by Paula Bovin for her regular contribution of news and notes. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. I'm Jeff Munn, radio voice of ASU women's basketball. In for Brad today under the weather. We'll get him back here as soon as he gets back to feeling better, which we hope is very soon. Big game tonight in the NFL, and it involves the Cardinals, or it impacts the Cardinals, as Buffalo plays at Seattle. We haven't really talked a whole lot today about the NFL weekend. But nothing too terribly shocking. I guess the Oakland beating Denver kind of confirms that they are for real.
And it's great, too, Jeff, that we have a team in Arizona like the Cardinals who have been up towards the top of the NFC West.
Yes.
And we actually take interest in watching the Seahawks and some of the other teams towards the top. In the past, it was like, well, the Cardinals lost, and I guess whatever happens in the rest of the NFC West just is going to happen.
Yeah.
Different space now. It's good.
And it is good. Now, the implication or the impact of this is if Seattle loses tonight, they fall back to 4-3-1, which puts them a game back or game ahead of the Cardinals in the NFC West. Now, at this point, and we're only about halfway through the season, so looking at the playoff standings, it's fun to look at, but it didn't tell you a lot. Seattle's currently the 3 seed at 4-2-1. They lose tonight, they drop to the 4. Whatever. Whoever wins the NFC West is not going to finish 1 or 2 in the playoff seeding, so they're not going to get a lot of home games. But a Seattle loss tonight, and Buffalo needs the game too because they're at 4-4, and they're a group of teams that are just outside the out in the cold on the playoff picture in the AFC. So it's just as important for Buffalo as it is for Seattle tonight.
And every time I see the Seahawks either winning or losing, and the Cardinals either winning or losing, that tie just sits in the back of my head because that you just have a feeling that when you tie, it really is a huge advantage for the team that is above the chaser.
Exactly.
It's so hard. It's not a loss for the Cardinals, but it's difficult to overcome because you're just not going to win the tiebreakers. And all basically Seattle has to do is almost hold serve because of that game, and they're going to win the West.
Now, we talked about it in the days after the game with Seattle, but Bruce Arians is on the competition committee. And if it does come into play at the end, I wouldn't be surprised if he begins some chatter about changing the overtime rules, at least so that they can come out of it with a winner instead of a tie. The colleges have figured out how to do it. The NFL should be able to figure out a way to do it. I realize ties don't happen that often, but this is a very vital game for both teams tonight. And yes, the Cardinals will obviously be rooting very hard for a Seattle loss. Should be a very interesting night up in Seattle. Paula Bobin attended the Torrey Lovullo news conference. I will pronounce his name correctly at some point. And we'll talk about that, what he said during the press conference, and we'll get her thoughts about the state of Arizona football, University of Arizona football. And look ahead to Thursday night's game, ASU and Utah. All coming up on the Brad Sesmatch Show, sports360az.com, azcentralsports.com.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sesmatch.
Brad is out today under the weather. We'll get him back as soon as we can. Jeff Munn, radio voice of ASU women's basketball, here in his stead, and always glad to talk sports with our friend Paula Bovin from azcentralsports.com. You just came out of the Torrey Lovullo press conference. I'm going to get right to the number one question I had on my mind. Was there any mention at all about his coaching staff?
No, that is something that did not come up. Most of the questions, though, that addressed anything about hiring, about what's going on with personnel, even players, he said, I'm just kind of been moving full speed. I want to get in. I'm going to start getting into all of this now. But he said he wasn't ready to go there with a lot of the specific personnel questions.
It's been generally, and I understand why, it's been reviewed as an excellent hire by the D-backs. He's a guy that has West Coast ties. He's a UCLA guy. So we know him from his college playing days. I do, because I announced his name at Packard Stadium a long time ago. But he's a guy that, in an interview several years ago, Paula, is an analytics guy. And he's also an American League guy. He's not real keen about the small ball game. Did he talk about that at all?
Yeah, he did. He talked about it, how he'll definitely have to sort of approach it differently, and how he had been an American League guy, and it, you know, it prompts you to sort of attack the game in a different way. But he sounded excited about it. And his, you know, it's so interesting what you said about sort of being the West Coast guy. One of my favorite little nuggets about him is his dad used to produce Hee-Haw.
That's right, Sam Lovullo.
Right. He would spend time in Nashville with them sometimes when they were working on the show and things like that. And, you know, just interesting. You know what's so interesting, Jeff, about this press conference? It just, everything about it, considering everything else that's happened with management and their hiring of managers in recent past, it's also right. It felt professional. It felt like this is a guy that was sort of universally respected. There was a ton of Boston area media who had come out for this press conference, and it was so interesting. And to a man, they were like, oh my God, this is a guy that we really, as media, enjoyed working with, and that players that they were around loved, because he was so honest and straightforward and knew how to make connections. I mean, there's not like a you know, he's sort of the opposite of a blowhard. He's kind of understated and is not going to, you know, talk about use hyperbole or things like that. But there's just such a strong respect that I kept feeling around, which, you know, there's been some issues with some of the hires they've made in the past, whether it was Wally Backman, whether it was, you know, bringing in people, not, you know, not necessarily management, but just overall that maybe weren't ready for the positions they were in. So it just, it felt right. It was really, really interesting.
I want to get one other quick thought just to tack onto that, and then I want to move on to football. You've been at the press conference today. You've watched what has evolved over the last month. You talked about the mood in the room today. Do you get the sense that the management team at the D-backs has gotten the message that there needs to be a turning of the page and a different approach?
Absolutely. I think just this hire kind of speaks a little of it. You know, I mean, this was about, I think, letting the GM that they hired have a big part and say in hiring, you know, which I'm sure it's probably been in the past, but you don't necessarily feel like it was that. It was, you always felt like things were coming from above or from the presidency or whatever. So there was certainly that aspect of it and kind of a humility about it. And as I mentioned, it just, the whole changing of attitude of letting the people who are in their positions do their job, I think they're in a much better place than they've been in a long time.
Paula Vovin, azcentralsports.com, our regular Monday news and notes visit. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat. The only NAU did win their game this weekend. We shouldn't overlook that. But amongst the Pac-12 schools, the only one playing was Arizona, and they didn't really play. They went to Pullman got drilled into the turf. Now, okay, I'm a couple of things. Number one, I didn't see the game, a lot of the game, or as much as I wanted to. So I don't know really how much of this Arizona could have controlled in terms of Washington State rolling up 69 points. But it just smelled to me like Mike Leach was running it up on Rich Rod. And if that's the case, why on earth would he do that?
Well, I think, you know, the part of it is the pressure I think coaches are feeling now about polls and how they're evaluated and scores and how that plays a part in where they are in the rankings, what bowl games they go to. I mean, it's the same thing we've heard about with basketball for years. I think there's that element. I saw some of that game. UA looked awful. I mean, they just looked awful. They are injured, but they just, when you're losing by that many points, and I will say that the Cougars are a very good team. I've seen a lot of them this season. They're a great team, but, boy, this something is off down there. You know, and Rich Rod has talked about it. Recruiting has not been where it should be. I think that this season that's really come back to bite them. I know they're excited about what they're getting next year or whatever, but I think they're paying the price for past recruiting mistakes, paying the price of injuries. And, you know, at this point in the season, you hate to see a team lose by that much, but sometimes it speaks of guys mentally checking out. And I have no idea if that's the case because I'm not around that program enough. But that was an awfully lopsided game.
Now, I wrote a column yesterday. It'll be on sports360az.com. I still think it would be a massive mistake for Arizona to make a move on Rich Rod for a couple of reasons. They have been wiped out by injuries. And frankly, Paula, I don't think they can do better for a head coach. They go out in the marketplace this winter. They're going to find out they're not going to do better than Rich Rod. Am I right?
I agree with you 100%, Jeff. I just think that, I mean, we know that Rich Rod is a good coach. We've seen what he's done in the past. He is very respected for his innovation of the game, you know, his knowledge, his preparation, all those things. So I agree. You're not going to find somebody better. Yeah, I think, you know, we're learning what we've actually kind of known is that it's a hard place, I think, to recruit down there. It's a basketball school, right? And
right.
It is not many universities have managed to be successful at both. Some have, but it's a challenge. And I think right now, when you look at all other options at Pac-12 schools, you look at, you know, the facilities at Oregon, even though some schools are starting to catch up there. You're looking at some people want to play in L.A., and they've got all the talent they can recruit in Los Angeles. I think it's just been a hard place to recruit successfully recently in Twin. And I'm a big fan of continuity in coaching.
So
I know that is a hard thing for a lot of people to get their brain around because people lose and you want to, you want to end it quickly because of the high stakes and everything else financially. But I think continuity, especially in college, there's great value to that. So I think it would be dumb to make a move.
I got about a minute, Paula. Washington should move into that top four with the A&M loss this week. And I look at their schedule, USC, Arizona State in Seattle, both of those in Seattle, the Apple Cup in Pullman. To me, that Washington State game probably is the biggest obstacle they got left. I don't even think the South champ in the Pac-12 title game can give them much of a contest.
Yeah, I think the USC game could get interesting because I have a feeling we're going to see SC at their best at that game. But it's a hard place to win. And so, no question, Washington has better personnel than Washington State, but Mike Leach is a master at getting the most out of the players he has. It'll be an emotional game. It will be in Pullman. I'm really looking forward to that. And, Washington has looked like a team that's, for the most part, hard to beat. But I think the Cougars for sure are going to give them a game. But I'm interested in the USC one, too. I think there's some potential for something, at least a close game.
Yeah, and ESPN sending game day out there this week to Seattle. So they obviously are anticipating a good football game as well. Paula, appreciate
it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did. They announced that Saturday night. Good to talk to you as always. And we'll catch up with you next week, and I'll have Brad back in this chair, I promise.
Great to talk to you, Jeff.
Same here. Thanks, Paula. Paula Bovin, azcentral.com. Her regular news and notes column. She attended the Tory Lovullo press conference. It's a funny thing, busy day today, even though ASU didn't play, the Cardinals didn't play. Cardinals do play Sunday against the 49ers, and we talked about the importance of this Monday night game for them as it relates to the Seattle Seahawks. Now, you want to know what's going on in sports in this town, you can go right to sports360az.com anytime you like, because they update everything. First weekend of high school playoffs was last weekend. They've got all the scores there. They've got all the latest news coming out of Cardinals, ASU, NAU, U of A. They'll have complete coverage of the Lovullo press conference, so you can stay right there. We're awfully proud of our partnership, too, with azcentralsports.com. Brad Sesmatch show on a Monday. Get well soon, Brad, because the longer you're gone, the more I sit here. Just let that roll around in your head there, Mr. Sesmatch. It's Monday.